Tonight, a former lieutenant colonel in the United States Army steps forward to tell the tale that he gave it all up to avoid taking a dangerous bioweapon perpetrated by the very military he served. We're going to learn about what it was like for a commander inside the deadly DOD mass genocide operation and what goes into the decision to walk away from it all. This is the Dr. Jane Ruby Show, and you're about to enter Truth in Medicine. Welcome to the Dr. Jane Ruby Show on this Monday, December 12th, 2022. I'm glad you're with me tonight. Well, my focus over the last week or so has shifted to the military. Last week, I was honored to host 9 military members and vets to an event to educate people about the scourge of child sex trafficking. None of my vets were famous for or congressional candidates or anything like that, but they were heroes in my book nonetheless. Take a look at this picture. I think I have their permission to show it. One of them needs to remain anonymous, and that is Danny Terminal CWO, and we have his emblem over his face. Let's keep this picture up. Anyway, one of them was a Green Beret commander who came all the way from a NATO assignment in Belgium. Another was a veteran who started a moving company in Florida that's now gone national, and he only hires other vets and first responders. Yet another one was a dual citizen of El Salvador, and he's returning. He's a conservative who's planning to run for president of the country, and we'll have him on the Dr. Jane Ruby Show soon. Another was somewhat known, as I said, in social media folklore as Danny Terminal CWO, who's an incredible hero that's done so much work in supporting our military from the inside. And another impressive guest of mine is the feature of tonight's show, and that's former Lieutenant Colonel Brad Miller, who was caught in the position of not only refusing the shots for himself, but also in a commander position where he was expected to give the order for others to take it. No telling how many lives he saved by discouraging his troops not to take it and to tell them that it was their choice. His story is compelling because he didn't choose to try for a religious exemption, and he made the ultimate decision to resign rather than to be involuntarily separated. You know, we've lost so much in our country. We've lost our national security, in my opinion. We've lost our military readiness. We've grounded elite Top Gun fighter pilots because their hearts are damaged from this poison. But right now, we seem to be in an era of cover your ass. You know, the pleas for amnesty are abounding from those who are part of this mass genocide. So many are complicit around the world in crimes against humanity, in mass genocide, premeditated mass genocide. Many of those conducted these killings over and over again, knowing full well what they were doing. Many were paid handsomely over and over again, or provided with gifts in kind. And part of the cover your ass and amnesty, they're all part of that now that we're in. It also includes this current discussion of the going on in Congress around dropping military mandates to take the jab among our do-nothing, corrupted, bought and paid for, every last one of them, congressional members on both sides of the aisle. Did they suddenly grow a conscience? Did they listen to Edward Dowd with his actuarial all-cause mortality numbers off the charts? Did they suddenly figure out the VAERS database or the DMED database numbers and say enough is enough? Well, don't hold your breath, because it's all BS. It's all theater. All dog and pony show hearings. All the wimpy ass letters to SecDef Austin, allowing him to just kind of ignore it. I want you to take a look at what's happening to our military forcing them to take these shots, in some cases, with super heavy coercion. Let's take a look at this 1 minute clip of what our military members go through for general injections and vaccinations. Take a look. Please roll the tape.
Where's your military bearing at? Come here. Sit down. Hey. Sit down. Put your back up against that refrigerator now. Put your back up against the refrigerator now. Sit down now. Sit down. All right, come on. Let's go.
All the way down.
All the way down.
Pretty rough, isn't it? It's pretty difficult to watch, but not as difficult as it is to live it. So before you start thinking that our Congress has grown a conscience, not. This is just another re-election ploy by these scumbags who get into office over and over and over again through rigged elections and fake promises. Let me tell you something. No amount of death and destruction suddenly made them sit up and take notice after 2 years and try to right the ship. No, no, no. These scumbags are up to something for their own game. Of that you can be sure. Let's use Ron Johnson as an example. He held his hearings in January and then basically did nothing but send out his campaign donation cards for the rest of the year. And now that he's reelected, he threw out one last hearing last week, a little red meat for the base, before he goes off on his holiday recess with all the other bought and paid for phony representatives. But you see, the problem is much bigger than that. There's a scary lockstep, full speed ahead phenomenon going forward every day. We're all in this runaway train. Some of us know we're on the runaway train, but many do not yet know. Will it be too late? You decide. Well, before we go for a quick break, I wanted to give you a word about protecting your retirement savings because the American economy is unstable right now. It's looking like 2008 all over again. And during that time, many Americans, millions of them, watched their retirement savings disappear while those who invested in physical gold and silver were protected. Look, if you've got $50,000 or more in your IRA or your 401k, you could be at risk again. But there is an IRS loophole that allows you to add physical gold and silver to your retirement plan. Call my friends at Goldco for a free IRA kit and learn more about how you and your fellow Americans can protect their savings with gold and silver. You might even get $10,000 in free silver to do it. Call Goldco at 855- 791-2619 to get your free kit. And remember that Goldco is an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau with thousands of positive customer reviews. They've helped place nearly $1 billion in precious metals. So don't wait. Call Goldco today. Call 855-791-2619. So, yes, Dr. Jane is recovering from a bit of a cold and a cough. I think it's related to the fact that I hosted two military vets this weekend for the event, both of them multiply injected and boosted. And I happen to be one of those people who's very sensitive. Well, I forgot to turn up the Triad Air home unit to 500 from the 250, and I didn't wear my shield out, and I was in a room of probably at this event of probably many people who've been shot up. So I'm taking my supplements. I'm wearing my shield. I've cranked up everything in the house. I'll take your prayers for a quick recovery because I don't need any distractions from the work of the Lord that I'm doing. So thank you for that. Triad Air. Go to filterssuck.com. Filters with an S, filterssuck.com, and use the promo code Ruby for 10% off and free shipping. And the reason their website is called Filters Suck is because you'll never have to change a filter. This is not a scam company looking to sell you unending rounds of filters. When I return, we're going to hear the inside story of a DoD Army commander charged with getting his troops shot up with this bioweapon, but who chose instead to warn them against it, giving up everything he had worked for almost 20 years. That's my kind of hero. How about you? Stay with me. I'll be right back.
Well, the show is brought to you by Danette May and Mindful Health, LLC, featuring Danette May's top superfood product from her Earth Echo food line, Cocoa Bliss. Nothing feels better than being able to enjoy rich, smooth, creamy chocolate and knowing you're doing something good for your body. They start with 100% organic cocoa beans that are naturally kissed by the sun, maintaining its miraculous health benefits. Then they blend it with turmeric, MCT oil, coconut, Himalayan sea salt, cinnamon, and black pepper for the perfect blend to make you feel the best you have ever felt. Fall in love with a truly decadent, healthy, guilt-free chocolate, removing your cravings, facilitating weight loss, boosting your energy, and reducing inflammation with one simple drink. It's friendly to paleo, gluten-free, keto, vegan, and vegetarian diets. They're offering up to 15% off when you use the promo code RUBY. Go to earthechofoods.com and use the discount code RUBY for your 15% off.
Well, so many of our country's best, our elite-trained military members, managed to hold the line, hold off on taking what they know is a very dangerous shot. And they further understand that it was their own leadership sending them to their potential disability and death. Many of them, career military that ended up losing or giving up years of hard-earned rank and benefits. Personally, I'm grateful because we're going to need as many of them as we can get who are not injured or permanently damaged mentally and physically from these shots when we get through whatever we're going through. My next guest is one of those heroes. Brad Miller is a West Point graduate and former lieutenant colonel in the United States Army. He served as a battalion commander at the Department of Defense the time the injection mandate went into effect, and he was relieved of his command and subsequently resigned from the Army with over 19 years of active service. And Brad Miller joins me now. Brad, it's so good to see you. Good to have
you. Great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. As I said in my opening before that, you were with me as one of my guests. I was really honored to have you at a recent event that General Flynn and Laura Logan hosted, focusing on child sex trafficking. But it was very important that to the general that we have veterans there. So thanks again for being there. It was great to meet you in person.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a great event. I was very happy to be there. Thanks again for the invite and great to see you once again here.
Absolutely. Let's kind of start from the beginning, because as I said, you have this really unique position in that you were not only trying to protect yourself from taking these shots, but you were also a commander, a very high rank, over many other people that you were supposed to order to get these shots. You know, one of my first thoughts and questions is, when did you know, at what point in general did you know, and how did you know that these shots were different from anything else people have been obligated to take in the military, and that it could decimate our military?
Day one. And I'll tell you why. That's not because I'm some super genius, but it's because I was just skeptical from the very beginning. So I never believed the COVID story. I've long been skeptical of what our government has been involved in. I know that's weird to say as an Army officer, but I mean, it's just the truth, you know? And so I mean, I can remember back in early February of 2020, and I was stationed in Korea at the time. So I was in Asia, as all of this was supposedly happening in China, et cetera. But I remember just being extremely skeptical of everything that was going on. And so as we moved forward through 2020, towards the end of the year and into 2021, and everybody started talking about this new vaccine that was supposedly going to come out. I mean, I was extremely skeptical from day one. And in all honesty, there was never, ever a chance that I was ever going to take it.
That's pretty amazing. So you were putting pieces together before 2020 that something was wrong.
Yeah.
Because I don't hear a lot of people in the military make reference to that. Can you talk about either categorically?
Yeah. So
what you saw?
Yeah. So a lot of my process of waking up had nothing to do with my military service. It was in spite of my military service, not because of it. It was 100%, or at least nearly 100%, due to just research and pieces that I would put together on my own. I think yesterday on your Telegram, you mentioned a book called The Committee of 300. You know, I mean, I had that book. I mean, I read this book 15 years ago.
Wow.
So I actually looked
ahead of your time.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And I don't mean that to toot my own horn, but what I mean is to say that I had started to become extremely skeptical as to how the world operates and as to our government's role in that. And so I would not say that I lived in a state of permanent cognitive dissonance, but I was constantly having to try and reconcile with myself, my military service, with what I always thought the government was probably involved in. And the way that I kind of reconciled myself over time, like 15 years or so, was, my problem is not with America, the country. My problem is not even with the military, with the institution of the armed forces, or my service. It's more with very evil people who have kind of taken charge of these institutions and turned them on their head and are using them against their intended purposes.
You know, we learned in the COVID scam where, you know, in this lockstep magic, every corporation, every industry, the way they got to people was to withhold, or in exchange for keeping your job, keeping your salary, keeping your benefits that you built up. And people tend to get very protective about what they have invested in. And it's no different in the military, right? I mean, you all, sure. I've learned so much in the last couple of years about what you all invest in. I spoke to one of the vets at the table, a military current active, who said, mm-hmm. I can get another promotion, but it's almost like antero grade commitment. So if he goes to the next level, he has to owe them a certain amount of. So sure. I understand it. So talk about that a little bit and how that really coerced a lot of your fellow military to take this shot.
Yeah. So what I think happens is, military, like other professionals, are very apt to probably view their own identity in terms of the profession that they're a part of. Mm-hmm. Doctors are probably the same way, you know, attorneys, even pilots. I don't think that is necessarily bad, except where maybe you take that to an extreme. But a lot of military folks, I mean, that is a key integral part of their personal identity. And they are not going to easily give that up. They don't believe they should have to easily give that up. I'm in agreement with them. And they want to serve. And much of that desire to serve is entirely well-intentioned and well-founded. But when you put them in a situation like this, they're going to instinctively, naturally look for ways to try and protect what they see as a part of their identity. And I understand that. Like, I don't necessarily fault them for that. I understand the sacrifices they have made. I mean, we've got individuals that are, you know, they're over the 10-year mark, they're over the 15-year mark. They, along with their families, have been planning for a retirement that they have known would always be there. Mm. So, and it's weird when you've always known that, hey, I can work very hard for 20 years. I can deploy, I can risk injury or even death, you know, in a combat zone or whatever, right? But I can work very hard for 20 years, but in the end, I will continue to be rewarded for the sacrifices that I made over 20 years. Yeah. I mean, I understand all of that. And so it puts somebody in a very complex situation where they're also trying to balance the needs of their family against maybe making a decision that they otherwise would not make. I mean, I at least understand the complexities of this situation.
Sure, sure. So let's start there, because that's really kind of the beginning of your story and how, as I mentioned before, as you've explained it, but I want you to be able to explain it on the show, that you were in a position where you wanted to refuse it, understandably, but you were also charged with commanding people under you to take it. So explain, you know, tell us about what the conditions were before we get into what your thought processes were and how, right, what your decisions became.
Yeah. Okay. So I assumed command of my battalion in June of 2021. So just to try and put together the picture of the timeline, I took command on June 10th, 2021. DOD's mandate went into effect on August 24th, 2021. Mm-hmm. I might be off by a day or so, but about August 24th. Yeah. So I was in command about 2.5 months before then. And on the day that I took command, I mean, I very much knew that I was on borrowed time. I mean, I knew that. I knew that this mandate was going to come anytime. I realized it could happen any day. And I thought that it was extremely unlikely that I would fulfill the entire duration of my command. Typically, when you take battalion command, you will be in command for 2 years. I was only in command for 4.5 months. Mm. So I took command in June. The mandate is implemented at the end of August. And then I am formally relieved of command at the end of October. So that's how everything happened from June to October. Okay. And I'll kind of tell you what happened.
Yeah, tell me what during those 4 months. Yeah, those 4 months are key.
Yeah, so I take command. I know very much that I'm on borrowed time, but technically the mandate has not been implemented yet. The shot is very much mandatory. However, there's a lot of influence, maybe even some coercion that is occurring from the top down all across DOD. For people to go ahead and start getting the shots. And at this point, many people in my battalion had already taken the shots. When I assumed command, if I remember correctly, I believe that 80% of my battalion had already technically voluntarily chosen to take the shots. And so my battalion was about 550 soldiers. So approximately 80% had already taken the shots. And I told my battalion when I took over that regardless of the pressure that they had been receiving up to that point or the pressure that they would receive from the top, that they would receive none from me, that I had my own very personal, strong opinions about it. You know, they could come talk to me behind closed doors about my own personal opinions, but that as a battalion commander, I was entirely agnostic as to what they did. You know, hey, it's up to you. If you want to take it, that's your decision. If you choose not to take it, that's also your decision. I'm not going to pressure you one way or the other. And I know you've been receiving a lot of pressure up to this point. That stops right now with me.
Let me ask you a quick question, though. What was the communication or commanding from your leadership to you? Did it escalate to, hey, you better get them all shot up? Or was it the carrot or the stick? Did they try to induce you with treats, or did they eventually get to the point where, hey, you better get it, your entire group shot up or you're in trouble? Where was that whole thing?
Not the stick, not yet.
Okay.
And I would say even offering carrots was almost done in a very sneaky way, if at all. And here's why, because commanders couldn't offer you carrots. I mean, like legally they couldn't. So there were words that were dropped here or there, in which, you know, you were encouraged to use your influence, you know, as a commander to encourage and influence your subordinates to do the right thing. But, you know, people were very, I mean, there were people who definitely went over the line in terms of the encouragement and influence they were, they felt willing to give. I will tell you that my direct boss didn't do any of that with me. My direct boss knew from day one, because I told him that, you know, I was not vaccinated. I did not plan to get vaccinated. And he never once gave me any grief about it. I mean, for the entire duration.
Did he take it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I think he was even a true believer in it. I mean, I think he thought that I was totally wrong, but he he respected my decision on it. And that never changed. I mean, I will give him his due credit.
Let me ask you a question I've been dying to ask military. Like, did anybody ask you, your leader who believed in it, and then you told him, hey, I'm not doing it, okay, I don't believe in it. Did anybody ever say to you, well, listen, Brad, you know, I respect you, you're really accomplished. What is different about this shot for you than all the other ones we've been ordered to take and dutifully took? You know, did that happen? And if it did, what did you say?
Sure. I had several conversations. I had one or two conversations with my direct boss about it. I don't know that we went into great detail, but I do remember we at least casually had the conversation. It was probably superficial, but I did tell him that, hey, I don't exactly know why we feel the need for a shot or where exactly it's coming from, et cetera. I mean, even then we're talking about conversations that happened almost a year and a half ago.
True.
So
we didn't know as much as we kind of know.
Correct.
Now. But correct. That was the experimental issue.
That's right.
Comirnaty approved, but not approved, but it's available. Yep. It's not available. So yep. I'm sure that made you really suspicious.
So here's the deal with me with the Comirnaty thing. I actually did not find that out. There were some people who were pretty hip to that very quickly. I was not one of those.
Yeah.
I think I found out about the whole Comirnaty shell game around the end of the year. So either December of 2021, maybe January of 2022. So that actually was not part of my decision-making calculus when I refused to take it. So when I found that out later, it was almost confirmation in my own mind that, okay, this is far more sinister than I thought. And even the mandate itself is just completely
vindicated
legal.
And post, you know, losing everything, vindicated at least a little bit of, wow, I was on the right track.
Sure. Right? And now I think that is, for those in uniform, I think that's actually the strongest argument to take is that, hey, look, the order itself is illegal. I mean, it's predicated upon medical fraud, you know? But I did not actually know that. I did not know that in June, August, even October of 2021. I didn't personally know that. And I considered myself to be someone who was actually doing a lot of research. That one slipped by me for at least a couple of months. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was entirely unethical. I did not put in for a religious accommodation request. And the reason that I did not put in for a religious accommodation request has nothing to do with my own religious objections to the shots, which are many. But it's because in my mind, if you request a religious exemption, this is just my own personal view, it's almost as if you are conceding the safety and or the effectiveness of the shot.
Yeah.
You know? It's just that, oh, well, you have issues with maybe how the shot was produced or developed or researched, et cetera. But for me, I'm not even going to concede to you that the shot is safe or effective. So it's almost like I don't even need to go to the question as to how it was researched or developed or whatever. Yeah, I mean.
Well, it reminds me of some of the shady frontline doctors that are now being outed because they would say things like, well, you know, it's okay for the elderly, but it's not good. Don't give it to your children. Wait a minute, a poison's a poison. If it's not good for your children, it's not good for your elderly or anybody in between. So good for you for really, you know, putting those pieces together. And wow, you're the people under you were very lucky that they had that opening with you. And I agree with you. It's enabling. I don't want to judge people that took an exemption, but you're basically enabling the program, the mass genocide program, to continue.
That's the way that I saw it.
No, you were telling me you're in the DOD when these first happened. So you're inside. Like I was a pharmaceutical industry insider. I wasn't a vendor. I wasn't a research, you know, administrator. I was inside the belly. I was in companies. So you know, like what they would do is they would, these vendors, analysts and, you know, things like, they would excuse them from the room and then tell the rest of us what the bad news was and the truth was. So I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, you were inside the DOD. What the hell was going on? I mean, just categorically, I know you're not going to talk about things that are top secret. Just asking for what was the mood? What was going on? And, you know, we've been told over and over again, and there's documentation, paper trail, that this is a DOD-run mass genocide. And I understand the Committee of 300. That's what's probably at the very top. But is a DOD mass genocide operation being run on the world, not just the United States.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. What was going on?
Yeah. So I fully believe that. I kind of believe that from the beginning, but that is not common knowledge at all amongst the uniformed personnel. So
how do I know that? And they don't.
Sure. For sure. For sure. But you know, why do I know that, having been someone who was in uniform? I know that because of the research that I've done, that has nothing to do with my military service. You know, inside a battalion on the ground in a line unit, nobody's aware of that. You know, particularly a year ago. And one of the things that I say to my peers, people who are still in battalion command positions, et cetera, is that if I'm going to view this as charitably as possible, I can probably grant you that maybe 15, 16 months ago when the mandate first came out, you're probably a little bit naive, but I can at least understand your ignorance then. But in the last year to 15 or 16 months, there at least have to be question marks in your heads. Yeah. So it's almost like, you know, I say to these guys, you can no longer claim ignorance at this point. And I've used the word coward. I've used it multiple times. You know, I tell them, you know, you're either a coward because you know that this is shady, you're still going along with it, or you're even afraid to look into it because you're afraid of what you might find if you start doing any of your own personal research into it, which means you're also a coward.
Yeah. And in mm-hmm. addition to that, they also now have, since January of this year, the explosion of the DMED, Defense Medical Epidemiology Database, that was blown open. Yep. By the three DOD whistleblowers, right? So it's Lieutenant Colonel Dr. Teresa Long, Lieutenant Colonel Dr. Pete Chambers, and Major Dr. Sam Sigalop. But here's an interesting story really quick. I was talking to Dr. Long, Teresa Long, once about a year ago, and I asked her what she thought about the lockstep nature of this. And she said, Jane, those of us in higher levels of military and training and strategy clearly understand that this is something, an operation that is on someone else's timetable. Mm-hmm. And that's very frightening. We've got about a minute left. You know, what are your thoughts on what they blew open in the DMED and then tried to cover up and say, oh, don't, you know, nothing here.
Yeah. So those are the two things that I constantly go back to with my peers. One is, now you know the order was illegal, predicated upon, you know, medical fraud, misrepresenting a licensed product as, or an unlicensed product as licensed. Right. But the other is the DMED data. Like, hey, this should be alarm bells going off in your head. And if they're not, that itself is problematic.
Yeah. Yeah. There are people like Attorney Todd Callender who have helped a lot of the military. And he just said that he's seen documentation. I haven't seen it, but I do believe I'm seeing it anecdotally, that people mm-hmm. who take multiple versions of these shots actually have mental changes as well, a dampening of the frontal cortex. So they can't really reason and say, oh, look at the DMED. They don't even get that gut feeling of, something could be wrong. Anyway, let's take a break here. I'm really glad that you're able to stay with us for a second segment. And we'll come back in a moment and continue the conversation. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back in a moment after these words.
It's hard to overstate how important magnesium is for your health and well-being. In fact, magnesium deficiency can increase your risk of all illnesses. And you might not know that there are 7 different types of magnesium the body needs. BioOptimizers has the solution. Their supplement is specially formulated to dramatically improve your overall health, from reducing stress to improving sleep and boosting your energy levels. Go to magbreakthrough.com and use the code RUBY for 10% off. Don't wait to be deficient. Just go to magbreakthrough.com. Code RUBY.
Welcome back to this second segment of the Military Mandates. And my special guest, I'm going to call him Lieutenant Colonel, because I don't care what the military says. To me, he's a hero. It's Lieutenant Colonel Brad Miller, who joins me back again. Brad, when we took the break, we were talking about this issue about refusing, how you knew really early on. Let's talk about, first of all, what the process is. I don't think people understand. There's a process for everything in the military. What is the process for a military member to refuse to take the shot?
Right.
We can start from there. And then let's finish the story about how you got to end up resigning.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I came into command in June. In August, the mandate goes into effect. It is now mandatory, and you must take it. And so as soon as that mandate goes into effect, everyone across DOD knows, if for no other reason than, it's in the news. So then the orders start trickling down through the military that, hey, this is in effect. Formally order your troops to go take the shot. And of course, we already had records assembled as to who was already vaccinated and who was not. One of the things that I had been doing along the way, just ahead of the mandate, was I had actually been meeting with my unvaccinated soldiers in groups, not to try and, carry out some sort of coup or whatever of all the unvaxxed folks, but just kind of telling them, hey, listen, the writing is on the wall. Any day now, this mandate is going to come down and you got to have a plan. So whatever you're going to do, just think ahead of time and know what you're going to do. If you decide to take it, that's your decision. If you decide not to take it, also your decision, but that could result in you being out of the Army. You just need to know ahead of time. You got to have a plan. And I said, again, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but if you want to come talk to me behind closed doors, by all means, you're free to do so. And I'll tell you my own personal opinions, et cetera. And I had several very young soldiers come to me in tears behind closed doors because they were worried about losing their careers. This is what they had decided to do. They were very young, but they did not want to take the shot. Once the mandate is in effect, now what we have to do is we have to follow this process in which the company commander, so the company is the level of command below the battalion. So those are commanded by captains.
I see.
Those are it's your first line commander. Therefore, the officer over you who actually has legal authority because he can actually carry out the uniform code of military justice.
I see.
That has to be executed by commanders. It's really a command authority. So captains who are the commanders below me, I had seven companies in my battalion. Those company commanders now are charged with ordering each of their unvaccinated soldiers to go take the shots. In turn, I was ordered by my higher commander, so the brigade commander, a colonel, and he told me, Brad, go take the shot. At that point, what you do is you refuse. You sign a document that says, nope, not going to take it.
I see.
You have 3 days to then go. You had to go watch some little video. It was a little 3-minute video by the CDC, a cartoon. It was the most ridiculous thing you ever saw. Just factually incorrect. Just the most ridiculous piece of propaganda you would have ever seen. Exactly what you would expect from the CDC. And is a little 3-minute video. But you had to go watch that if you had refused. Then you come back and you get ordered again to take it. And if that video did not convince you, then of course you're just going to refuse again, at which time you're then ordered to go talk to some medical professional, which could be, for example, your brigade surgeon. So I had a conversation with the brigade surgeon. I asked him a bunch of questions that he was not necessarily able to answer. It was just kind of this just totally artificial conversation where both of us know we're literally just doing this because this is part of the process that I am ordered to go through as a refusal. And then in the end, it's okay. I'm marked down as a refusal. And then at that point, the process, we can go through the process to, kick me out or whatever. In my case, we never got to that because I ended up resigning. But what did happen is, of course, I was removed from command. So I was I was relieved of command for my own refusal to take the shot. On the command side of the equation, what's going on is I have soldiers in my battalion that are also refusals. And so we as a battalion, so I'm not the one who is standing in front of them saying, go take the shot. It's the company commander beneath me. But it does put me in a weird position because that order is coming down from the top. So it's almost like it's kind of coming through me to the commanders and being executed by them. But everyone in my battalion, everyone knew that I personally was a refusal and that I was probably not going to be in command very long. So I really hope that my example was, hey, listen, you do not have to take this, regardless of what the Army is telling you, you can refuse, but there will be consequences.
And they were lucky to have you because not everybody had a commander like that. A lot of them had commanders that pounded them and you got to take it. And, you know, no doubt you saved a lot of lives. You may not know how many and you may not know which ones. You might know a couple, but you may not know all of the ones you did. So let's, you know, hang on to that. It's one of the reasons I admire you very much. So anyway, continue on if there's more to the process.
Yeah. So I'll just,
and why you resigned. I want to hear that part of the story
too. Yeah. Right. Okay. So I was, relieved of command at the end of October of 2021. Mm-hmm. So now I'm a lieutenant colonel who has just been relieved of battalion command. Where do you hide a lieutenant colonel who's just been fired? So I get sent up to the division. So I was a battalion commander. Above the battalion, you have the brigade. Above the brigade, you have the division. My division was the 101st Airborne Division. So I go to the division commander's staff. And still, I mean, as soon as I show up, I mean, everybody knows that I'm the battalion commander who was just relieved.
Who was just canned for not taking the shot.
Yeah. So I was, you know, famous, infamous, probably depends on your perspective. So on January 31st of this year, 2022, there was a directive that came down from the headquarters of the Army. And it said that the Army was going to separate every unvaxxed soldier and that there would be very few exceptions.
Ooh, I see.
Right. The only exceptions would be those that were granted some sort of either medical or religious exemption. And we know that those are, I mean, extremely rare.
Oh, they were really rare. We saw the numbers and... Yep. And all that. What was there? You might be getting to it, so I apologize if I'm jumping ahead. But was there an advantage to resigning over allowing yourself to be separated forcibly?
Yeah. So there were two reasons why I chose to resign. One of them was moral, and then one of them was practical. And I don't want people can you know, congratulate me for the moral decision that I made. I'll explain that in just a moment. But there was a practical reason. So the practical. Here's what I gained practically from resigning. The word on the street was that if you got kicked out of the Army, or maybe the other services as well, but the word on the street for the Army was, if they kick you out, you're not going to get an honorable discharge. You're going to get something below that.
I see.
And we started to see that. And so, if you resign, you will retain your honorable discharge. So that's a practical reason. The moral reason, because I also, you know, at this point I left with just over 19 years of service. So there were plenty of people who were telling me, you know, you can stall, you know, you can stall, you can stretch it out to 20 years, et cetera. I opted to not even attempt to do that. I resigned. And the moral reason that I chose to resign was because this goes back to what you were talking about with the DOD earlier. I just felt I don't want to be a part of this in any way. I think this is far more sinister than even what a lot of people believe who already believe it's sinister. I think it's probably even worse than what many of them believe. Mm-hmm. I think our government is absolutely a part of this. And while I don't have anything against the Army per se, or against the armed forces in general, I believe that there are very powerful players who are very evil at the top, mm-hmm. who are perpetrating this, not just on service members, but on the country. And I don't want to be a part of it.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't want to be a part of it. You know?
Yeah, let me ask you a question, and I'm going to try to, it's not about the politics, but for example, Donald Trump has said that if he is reelected, that he is going to reinstate, bring them all back, reinstate. Now, it doesn't matter if it's him or, you know, whoever's on the horizon, Ron DeSantis or Joe Blow, I don't know. But anybody who gets into office in 2024 or who campaigns to get in 2024 and says, I'm going to bring all those officers back that either resigned or were fired, and I'm going to reinstate their benefits. First of all, I ask, well, what the hell are you going to do about those numbers in the DMED that dropped out of heart attacks and strokes?
Sure.
But
sure.
Let's put that aside for a minute.
Yep.
How does someone like you who did give up so much, how do you react to any politician that makes that promise?
Yeah. So exactly. It's, first of all, rescinding the mandate in my mind, because there's a lot of talk about that, you know, in Congress right now, too. And for me,
let's go there, too. Yep.
Yeah. So here's what I hear. What I hear are a lot of people jumping up and down very energetically but their positions are actually quite lukewarm, you know? So, and what I mean by that is, well, rescinding the mandate is step one, and rescinding the mandate in and of itself is only like a very minor victory. But let's start there. Let's assume that the mandate is rescinded. Okay, that's great news going forward, maybe for somebody who today wants to join, you know, the military. But again, I mean, we have so many people who are already injured and are already dead. But again, let's set that aside.
So much damage has been done.
Sure, sure. But so in my case, not because my case is any more important than anyone else's, but just using myself as an example, first of all, you can't give me my battalion back. I mean, I was fired from command before I even left the service. So how do you give me my battalion back? I mean, there's literally like, there's a new commander in that position now.
Right.
Or take the soldier who, just again, for the sake of an example, was stationed in Alaska, but has since moved his family to Texas. He has a new job. His kids are in new schools. You know, his wife has a new job. I mean, you're right. Just going to call him up and say, hey, good news. We fixed all of this. Just move on back, put your uniform back on. No harm, no foul. Right. It's not that easy. Here's the other thing is, where's the compensation for putting somebody through a year or a year plus of hell and putting their family through a year or a year plus of hell?
Right.
Being treated as a pariah in your unit, right. Being treated as someone who is a health risk to the unit, and then on the way out the door, not even being given the dignity of an honorable discharge. So where's the compensation for all of that? So in my mind, until we start talking about repeal of the mandate, reinstatement, compensation for those who were harmed in some way, whether it was financially by losing their job or losing their benefits or whatever, until we talk about the compensation for that, and then we talk about a thorough, complete investigation of how we got here. I'm not interested until we talk about all of that. That's kind of my point, my stance on that.
Yeah. It's like trying to go back in time and saying, well, I'm going to go back to when I'm 5 years old and then I'll just go forward again. No, everything's been laid out because you went through that time in a certain way to get to now. Yeah. It's the same principle. I think I personally think it's a BS political promise.
Sure.
But there will be those who see one little thing done, one person reinstated, and go, see, they kept their promise. So anyway,
my fear is, yeah. And this is just my thought. I mean, I could be wrong, but my fear about this as well is that this talk about the repeal of the mandate could just be a pressure valve in that it lets pressure off and then people forget about it. Or the lawsuits lose steam. I mean, I really hope that doesn't happen. I'm being told that that's not going to happen, but that's my fear too, is this is a tactic that is being used specifically as a pressure valve. And a lot of your uninformed or less informed Americans they'll fall for it, for, you know, just for lack of a better term.
Yeah. And one of the things I covered in the first segment before we met up with you is that we're in a little bit of an era right now of cover your ass. Let's ask for amnesty and, you know, everybody's softening up, you know, these CEOs of these companies. Well, we didn't know 100%. No, there's going to be enough of us to say no.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that you get that. You know, one question is what are the things that you hope to accomplish by actively talking about it? Because you are now becoming more and more, you know, visible. So what kinds of things are you hoping to accomplish by speaking out?
That's a great question. I think about this a lot. So here is my goal. Some of these are probably achievable and others, you know, who knows,
okay.
But first Dream and on. Foremost, sure. First and foremost, I believe that this is a spiritual battle. And I think God wins in the end. And so my duty to myself and God is to try and be on God's side as much as possible. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that victory is going to take place on this side or the next, but for me, that's almost, it almost doesn't matter. I mean, I just feel a duty to myself, my fellow man, of course, to God, to just try and do the right thing and to fight as much as possible. And then, you know, God will decide when good wins. But I don't believe in being the person who just, oh, I'm going to let God handle it. I mean, I think God expects us to fight back. And so I believe in resisting this evil I do believe that it's evil. I never believed that this was bad policy or incompetence. I believe that this is evil. At other lower levels, it may be further enabled by incompetence, but at the top, I do believe that it's evil. So what I would like to accomplish, and maybe this is possible, maybe it's not, but I would like for Americans in general to take a wholesale reevaluation of the way our government works. I mean, we're no longer operating on the Republican principles that the country was founded upon. And when I say Republican, I mean like lowercase r Republican, right. But we've departed entirely from those principles. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that we're going to get back to those principles without just a wholesale realignment. And in theory, some supreme evil, like what we've seen, this op that we've seen the last 3 years, if it woke enough people up, we could in theory, you know, carry out some sort of wholesale realignment. I don't know exactly what that looks like. I mean, I would certainly hope that that does not involve violence, but we do need people to start realizing that the way that they have thought that the world operates is not the way that it really operates. And I think at Amen. The end of the day, this is a worldview problem. A lot of people, the view they have of the world is inadequate for them to look at reality and make sense of what is happening. And they find themselves doing a lot of mental gymnastics because they see a lot of things. And then in their heads, they're like, you know, does not compute, does not compute, does not compute. And it's because their worldview is insufficient to make sense of reality. So I think a lot of people have just got to come to the realization that, wow, the way I thought the government operates, I always knew that there was corruption, but I had no idea that it was like this. That's what I want people to understand. If I can just be some small voice that helps people realize things are bad, they are not hopeless and good wins in the end, but they are really bad. Yeah. And pretending they're not bad is not going to help anybody.
Right. I think that's an incredible goal. I think a lot of us subscribe to it. Are you thinking along the lines of, because there have to be a lot of Brads out there, similar mm-hmm. situations, whether they're at your, you know, rank in the Army or not, but that get it. And when I said right. in my introduction, you know, I'm grateful that there are people like you from the military with all that elite training. I've said to, you know, nurses and doctors that had the good sense to leave in the beginning, I've mm-hmm. said, you don't cease to be that when you leave that institution. So you sure. guys have, and gals, whatever, soldiers have all this training. We're going to need it. However it shakes out, we're going to need it for, you know, that good and evil battle. So are you thinking along the lines toward that goal of, hey, let's coalesce wherever we can?
Yeah, I have thought about it. I have not taken any concrete steps towards that, but okay. I've done a lot of just
vision stage. Yeah,
sure. Personal reflection on that. And several people have reached out to me. I'm certainly very interested in that. Just like you mentioned, the people who are in the medical community and, hey, we're going to need that training, et cetera.
Yeah.
What I would say for military officers is these are individuals who are invested in their country. There are also individuals who have taken an oath to the Constitution. Now, I think many of them are in violation of that.
Remember
oath,
that right? document?
Yeah, remember that?
Yeah.
But for those who kind of wake up to the fact that, you know, they need to exercise more loyalty to the Constitution, that is important. We're going to need individuals who feel that sort of investment towards the founding principles of our republic. Because those are, Amen. It's almost like that's few and far between. So I feel like that's what military officers, especially those kind of at my level, those who were, 15, 18, 20 years of service, have been in command positions. They know what that means, probably have a couple of deployments under their belt. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they've been there, done that. But what I want them to realize is, you know, you took an oath to the Constitution. Just because your bosses are telling you to do something, that doesn't mean that you turn your back on the Constitution and the country. And I illustrate that with the example yeah. that I saw myself in, where I felt like I was in a position where I was being asked to choose between the country and the Army. And I chose the country. And mm-hmm. because in my mind, there's an order of precedence there. You don't put the country below the country's military. Like in my mind, that doesn't make sense. the country comes first. The military exists to protect the country, protect the ideals of the country, support and defend the Constitution, you know, not the other way around. Yeah. So when we talk about moving forward, if I were to engage with my peers who are still in uniform, we've got a lot of work to do to actually kind of restore this republic. And that's where I think we could use a lot of military officers, a lot of mid-grade military officers.
And to that end, because we're coming to the end of this, it's incredibly how fast it goes. Your story is powerful. It's important. Your website's under construction, so we'll keep people posted on that. I'm really looking forward to that. But you're on Twitter at symbol for at Brad Miller 1010. So it's Twitter at Brad Miller 1010 for as long as they allow him. The great censors, Brad, Lieutenant Colonel Brad Miller. Thank you so much for being here today, for everything you're doing, and sharing the story. I know we'll talk again. So if you'll come back, that'll be wonderful. God bless you, and thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you.
You're a great American hero. And that concludes this edition of the Dr. Jane Ruby Show. Before I close out, I want to remind everyone that I'm being sued by Dr. Robert Malone for defamation for $25 million. It's a baseless lawsuit, but I ask you for your prayers, for your support, whether it's financial or in prayer, to givesendgo.com, protect Dr. Jane. Thank you so much for being with me, and I'll see you again on Wednesday.